is SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, you'll find it here. It's Insight Applied.
And with that, we have kicked off episode 150 of SMC. My name is Charlie Moore, and I'm joined here by Rita and Tess as we kick off this landmark episode. So as we've stated in episode 149, we will be recapping listener questions. So we're excited to dive into those and get some debate and hopefully answer some questions that were submitted. And we will also be hearing from our SMC founders, Brad and Scully, who will be sharing their collective knowledge and insight of what they've learned from 150 episodes. So we'll be kicking off with them.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And as mentioned earlier, we now have two very special guests who are joining us back to very familiar airwaves. We have none other than previous SMC hosts, Brad and Scully. How are you both?
Fantastic. Great to be back in these surrounds.
Doing all right. Thank you.
Doing okay. And we managed through technical difficulties and we are finally here, which is great. So now that we have reached this great milestone of episode 150, I can only really take credit for one episode or two. How did this podcast come around? I mean, it's 150 episodes is an incredible achievement.
Well, I think just really it was from both of us, a bit of a realization that the internet was there and school marketing officers were getting washed over with information. And really they needed a way to sort through all of that marketing information with some sort of a school marketing filter.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it was a genuinely altruistic desire to share the world of marketing to schools. And what better way than through the airwaves? And the fact that it's harder to interrupt you when you're on the airwaves, there's no one to stop you. So it's a great opportunity. No,
and it was really nice that more than one person listened.
Well, that's great. Well, hopefully we don't ruin those lofty subscriber lists then now that we've taken over. So one thing I did want to know, because again, 150 is a hell of a milestone. What have you two both learned along the way, both about podcasting? Because I know that that's something that our subscribers and listeners are interested in, as we've seen in a couple of our surveys, that podcasting is something they want to learn more about, but also SMC. So, I mean, what have you both learned about podcasting then?
Keep it brief, keep it bright, hopefully bring a bit of energy to what you're talking about. Make the content current, accessible. And in terms of what else we've learned is you just need to listen to episode one to now to see how incredibly marketing has changed, not just how we communicate marketing, but marketing has changed. So there's so much to talk about. Oh, and the other thing, get a good editor because it can make you look better than you are.
That's exactly right. I mean, Brad, you had a bit of background in radio, so it was a fairly natural step.
Yeah, it was natural in the sense of you knew how to construct it and what the basic, if you like, the rules were. And a little bit of technical background as well. But I think probably the thing for me was that, which I knew from radio, but these listeners who we don't necessarily always get to talk to become part of the family. They're friends. And when we do get to meet them and see them at conferences or at their schools, they treat us like friends. And that's just a lovely thing.
No, it is a great medium for building that community. And again, that's something why we've always referred to it as something that would work well for schools. So we're always talking about school marketing trends. Obviously, that's the nature of the podcast. But having seen, spoken about 150 different episodes, what have you seen from episode one to 150? What are the consistent trends that you've realized that you've been talking over and over about, or that you realized that something became bigger than you expected about the industry, but also school marketing?
I think content marketing's got to be really high on that list. And whether you call it content or inbound marketing doesn't make too much difference in, you know, these sorts of conversations. The uptake of social media was big when we started. It's bigger. And I think, Scully, the overall, what I'd just call the professionalisation of school marketing, that school marketers are constantly being pushed and want to get better at their own craft.
They do. And the digital revolution has lent itself beautifully to that small targeted community marketing, which might have been harder in the past. The budgets weren't there or the ability to target. So I think school marketing has come of age by harnessing some of these amazing tools that are out there. So we're riding that wave.
No, that's absolutely great. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for joining. I know that you're not too far away, and I know that the plans for SMJ are well underway. So we look forward to hearing another edition of both of your voices online and available to download. Thank you very much for joining me, and congratulations on reaching episode 150.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
So from episode 149, we invited our SMC e-newsletter subscribers to send their questions about SMC, anything school marketing and communications related, to us. And we've received a great number of questions, and we'll be working our way through them. Hopefully we get to them all. But we are starting off with a question from Kevin in Western Australia. So the question is, how can electronically based marketing lead to increased enrollments in a market with declining demographics? There's a little bit in that to unpack. We're not quite sure why the demographics are declining, but we will, I guess we don't know whether that's internal or external or what year groups or what quite we're talking about, but we'll try and address it fairly broadly. So I suppose for me, when I looked at this question, the first thing that jumped off the page for me was trying to work out, get a bit of insight into why these demographics are declining. And if it's, say, if it's in a particular student population, whether that's something that the school has seen coming for a while. Is that something that we can be pre-planning, or has that really come out of nowhere? I think electronically based marketing can do a lot of great things, but doing a lot of heavy lifting in something that, if it's an uncontrollable factor, might be quite difficult to do. But Tess, what kind of things can we look at from a research perspective right from the start, I suppose?
Yeah, look, I will cover the research side of it really briefly, because there's a lot of different ways you could learn a little bit more about your target market. ABS data or census data is really handy to see, to try and pick any trends or insights in terms of the local demographics. And if you can, use a geo mapping tool just to see where your current and past enrollments are coming from. If you've got future enrollments for future years, then plug those in as well.
Is that kind of geo mapping, is that kind of at all different budget levels, or is that something that, I'm assuming the tools get more sophisticated the more you spend?
Yeah, look, there are different types of tools. We use one here that's really cost effective, but it's quite handy to map out your current enrollments.
And I'm guessing pretty much all schools should really have an idea on, at least not necessarily the tools, but I mean, they should have that data. I mean, if you're looking at your currently enrolled families and that kind of thing. So this should be something that's fairly achievable for a lot of schools to do.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, you can map it all out yourself manually if you don't have the tool. If you can get your hands on something that will plug them into something that looks like Google Maps, that's a really nice visual way of seeing where people are coming from. The numbers, you can go right down to year levels, past versus current versus future enrollments as well.
Yeah, okay. So getting a bit of an insight into your market, it was probably one of the first things that we'd suggest.
Absolutely.
Okay. As I said at the start, I mean, for me, digital and social and electronically based marketing can do a lot of great things, but it struggles occasionally, like any single platform might do, to do all of the heavy lifting, especially if it's something like enrollments. Rita, integrated campaigns, what else can we be looking at to sort of help bolster this?
Yes. And by the way, happy 150th birthday. It's very exciting. Feel so old. Yeah, I think everything that Tess said makes a lot of sense. There are cheap ways of doing it and really tackling that sort of issue of demographics and declining demographics. Integrating all the campaigns, as Charlie mentioned, is really important, just on social media, digital, but it's not the only way of addressing those type of issues. It's all about thinking outside the box as well. What can you do differently? Something that's gaining more traction within education at the moment, which is quite an interesting way of addressing issues like that, is community engagement, doing things like activations in shopping centers and really showcasing what your school or your college has to offer. So that way you're engaging with the community and hopefully demonstrating to them the value of maybe rethinking, is this the place to send my child? So really just integrated campaigns.
Yeah, for sure. And I suppose, again, we don't know the details for the declining demographics, but then if you're obviously you've looked at your own product and what you're offering to parents and to families and education, I suppose, as a whole, and you are very much in tune with what you're trying to do, that really it's about engaging your own community, isn't it? I mean, it's about trying to foster this kind of relationship that is great through social media, but obviously in-person activities is a great way to do it.
Completely. And I mean, just because you've done something one way for the last 15 years, for example, it's really important to rethink what you've been doing. are there areas, and as Tess mentioned, things like geomapping are really helpful for something like that. Where are students coming from? Is there a change in the trend? Maybe we should be focusing in this suburb or this area. And just really thinking outside the box, particularly if there's borders, for example. If it's a boarding school, is there a different town or a different area that you can target? It's just really rethinking what you've been doing and seeing new opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, great. I think we've covered that as much as we can. The next question comes from David, again from Western Australia. How do we manage expectations and still achieve enrollments, brand presence, stakeholder expectations, et cetera, he says, with a shrinking budget? Right. Well, there's a lot in that to unpack, isn't there?
Absolutely. And I think it's probably better for us to address them separately a little bit. So as far as achieving enrollments and brand presence, I would be thinking if you've got a small budget, be targeted. Before that, know what it is that you're trying to achieve, know what success looks like. Then be really targeted in terms of the people that you want to reach. Measure your activity and your efforts and then tweak it. It's not going to be necessarily perfect. In fact, most of the time it's not. But tweak, improve, measure again, tweak and improve.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose when you are running on small budgets, and we know a lot of schools are out there running on smaller budgets, that's actually where the strategy side of it becomes even more important. Because if you've got a massive budget, then really the wastage and getting your return on investment, almost, it's great and it is something that you'll be measuring. But when you've got a smaller budget, that's where you have to be even more strategic about your decisions.
Absolutely. It's critical to really be clear about what it is you're trying to do and how you're going to do it and how you're going to measure it as well. The other thing I'd address is part of the question says, how do we manage expectations? And David's mentioned stakeholder expectations. I think partly that's clarifying your messaging, but also being consistent in communicating that.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know in terms of stakeholder expectations. I mean, we can only assume it's going to be, we're talking about a principal or board, it might be parents or something like that. But I mean, when it comes down to managing expectations, Rita, I mean, that's something that you should be looking to be on the same page right from the start.
Absolutely. I mean, something that happens a lot at colleges and schools as well is that if enrollments are down, that people can go into a state of panic, which is, you know, and this comes back down to the planning again, is that nothing should be a massive surprise. When it comes to planning your media, your campaigns, it's really important to strategize that in advance of the beginning of the academic year so that all your budget is spread consciously across the year at important times. And just to make sure there's no panic buying or no panic decisions made.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, something that we do see a decent amount of in schools, unfortunately, is that the sort of the fear-induced marketing. And that's what we want to move away from, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I would add one more thing to that. We've talked a lot about strategy and knowing what it is you're trying to achieve. But I think sometimes strategy is developed without really considering the people on the ground. So for schools especially, look at what's happening in the classrooms and start inside and work your way out. And I think that really ties into managing expectations. What's actually happening on the ground might be quite different to what you're promoting.
Yeah, absolutely. And starting in terms of what's going on in your own house. I mean, something perhaps a little bit more in a practical sense. I mean, yes, we're talking about strategy, but if David's sat out there and he's panicking, and that's great, I'm in trouble here. I mean, things that come to mind about instant sort of wins would be looking at those low-hanging fruit that you can really kind of get bang for your buck right from the start. If it's one person stretched across lots of different goals, then it might be looking at, well, is there someone internally that can come in and really help to make the most out of this budget and really stretch it? If there's an internal skill that we can really work on or develop, then that's a very fast way of, I suppose, exponentially increasing your budget.
Great. And actually, just another thing to mention, because David, I feel for you. I understand the predicament you're in. They're very common grievances or worries for people working within a school or education. But I think coming back to the strategy side of things as well, that you cannot solve everything at once. And it really is a case of focusing on the big stuff first, where you can make a significant difference. That way you can also manage expectations that there's only so much you can focus on at a time, take a chunk out of it, and then focus on the other things once you've achieved what you can.
Yeah, I mean, with those competing drivers that are pulling you in different directions, that something that I think, Tess, you mentioned a couple of episodes ago was talk about this value zone. So if there is a lot going on your plate, then really identifying, okay, well, what does the school want to do? What does the school want to achieve? What do the parents want? And what do the parents want to achieve with the education for their child? So where do those two overlap? And that area is we're referring to the value zone. That can be a really fast way to help self-select, okay, what are we going to focus on? And then if it comes down to a stakeholder expectations, say with your board, then that's really going to be a conversation that I think Brad and Scully will be tackling on SMJ. Okay, now we are going to move out of Western Australia. We are moving to New South Wales. And this question comes from Sarah. Like many school marketers, I'm sure, I've been given the responsibility of looking after our school's social media along with my other administrative tasks. How do you best manage your social media channels when you're pulled in 100 different directions? Wow, we've heard that many, many times before, haven't we? I mean, the school marketer life, if it started right from scratch, can be pretty composed, but we know that that's not the case, that quite often it might be something that has been tacked on to an existing job or an existing role. So yes, we have heard this question before. So hopefully we've got something for you.
This is an interesting segue actually from the last point that you just made, Charlie, on finding that sweet spot or your value zone. And I think what's really important here is yes, have your strategy, but prioritize in terms of what's going to make the biggest impact with the least time, especially if you're just a one woman or one man band. So just in terms of social media, I will say it's better to focus on one channel and do it really, really well than trying to spread yourself across 3 to 4 channels and not quite maintaining that consistency and not quite hitting your targets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a very social media specific, I suppose, communication side as well, that with that strategy, we're looking at content calendars. We're looking at having an idea right at the start of the year. Okay, we're going to communicate by these different channels and these different mediums. This is our plan from the years. I mean, what we don't want to be in is a position that I think Sarah might find herself in, which is we're sat there on the Monday and going, right, I need to be posting on XYZ. I need to be doing that on Monday and Wednesday. And what am I talking about? What's going on this week? And then running around, because that will translate to a bit of a scattergun approach when it comes to the school's marketing. So right from the start, having a better look at that. Rita, I suppose, looking at your own internal processes, really.
Yeah, I think that's a really big one, because often we're all guilty of this. We get caught in the trap where, well, this is how we've always done it. This is how it needs to be done. I think it's really important to try and look at the way you're doing things objectively, really assess and audit your processes. Is there a more time efficient way I can do this? Is there a platform that can make my life easier, that can schedule things for me? Just really getting that sense of objective view of what you're doing and try and be more time efficient.
Yeah, absolutely. And on those scheduling tools and platforms, there are a number out there. I mean, just a couple. Again, it's going to come down to budget. But I mean, platforms like Hootsuite or Sprout, Falcon, Later. I mean, it depends what platforms you're on, because there are some like Iconosquare that just works just with Instagram. It's got a really nice platform. But if you're working on different social medias, then obviously you need to be looking at platforms that can work accordingly. But I mean, even Facebook, if you're just doing Facebook, you don't really need a planner as such. You can do a lot of your scheduling well in advance. If you can put away some time, and we know that time is very, very precious for school marketers. If you can put away a little bit of time, say the Thursday or the Friday or whatever it is the week before, and actually schedule out a load of posts, and you know, okay, right, I've got my base sorted. If something organic comes up, I can be there, I can capture it, and we can really make the most of that organic reach. But otherwise, having a bit of a schedule is very easily done, and it will save you time.
Yeah, I will say one thing about scheduling tools. What can be really handy as an additional feature is something that lets you monitor activity, but also do some social listening. So don't forget, it's a two-way conversation on social media. You're not just pushing out content and messaging. You're also listening to your audience, listening to your competitors, learning from what they're doing, but also learning more about your target market and building that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Hopefully that's helped you out, Sarah, and you know roughly which way to go from there. Next question comes from Vicky in Victoria. This one is about video. So our school wants to start producing new types of content, for example, video. How do you go about this? Okay, right. How are we going to unpack this? So, I mean, Rita, if you're going to be starting a new form of content, you're going to want to do it well, aren't you?
You are. But that said, I don't want people to be too intimidated either. We're not all Steven Spielberg, or it doesn't need to be that level of perfection necessarily. But I think have put some thought into the story that you want to tell through the piece of video content. And like Tess mentioned earlier, again, we're agreeing. We will disagree, Stephen, don't worry. Just an understanding of, well, what do you want it to be used for? Maybe someone in-house has some video capability. It doesn't need to be Hollywood standard, but it's important to put a bit of thought into what the messaging is. And there are some great tools out there for editing, et cetera, but try and do it relatively well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, perfection is not required right from the off, is it, Tess?
No, absolutely not. I mean, if you're creating a video for your homepage on your website, then absolutely outsource that and make sure it's done really, really well, unless you have specialized skills for it. However, you've also got, if you've got media students or a media department, see if there's some older students or a staff member that can help you there. But there's also some really nifty gear, and, you know, if you really like nerding out on this stuff, you can, you know, get yourself a decent lapel mic and a gimbal, just a handheld gimbal. And it's amazing what you can do on your smartphone, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully that's helped you on the way, Vicky. I'm pretty sure we've got some, there are some blogs kicking around on how to start working with video. So have a bit of a search for them. Next one, we're motoring our way through. We've got Michael coming from New South Wales. This is about SEO. So how often should you be measuring your website's search engine optimization? Well, I suppose for me, when I read this question right off the bat, is you don't want to be getting into that trap of paralysis by analysis. I mean, it's something that is obviously very important to the setup of your website, but it's something that you don't want to be checking in every single week and going down the black hole of time, just spending trying to change this keyword and tinker with this and tinker with that. I mean, when you're setting up your site, you're setting up a new page, or you're before or after a big campaign that you're about to run, or alternatively, you've just revisited your key messaging. Absolutely. That's the time to really get into the back end of your website and looking at your SEO. But for me, other than that, it's not something that you should be overly tinkering with.
Yeah, I think also the classic answer to this question is it depends. Depends how much time you have.
Most useful podcast ever.
It depends how many people in your marketing department, depends how big your website is. But I would say, you know, pick out your key landing pages and really make sure that you stay on top of optimizing those pages for search. Use Google Analytics, it's free. And in terms of your other content, just prioritize it. And maybe it's only an annual review on those pages, but definitely keep an eye on your key landing pages.
Yep, that's great. Okay, right. Last question and then we'll move on. So this comes from Lindy in WA again. Which email marketing platforms do you recommend? I don't want to say it depends. Okay, it's going to come down to your budget. It's going to come down to how many emails you're expecting to send and how big your school is. For me, I mean, those are the three things you'd be wanting to check right from the start. There's some really good platforms, but getting a handle on how many emails you're going to be sending is going to be a really fast way to work out what's cost efficient. Quite a few of the platforms do free trials as well.
They do. I mean, there's, again, you can sometimes get caught up with there's so many different options out there, which is the right one for you, which is the one that will suit the college or the school best. Just play around with the different platforms. As Charlie, you mentioned, a lot of them, most, I would say all of them have pretty much free trials. See which one you're most comfortable with, test them a few times. You can also do a test email to yourself to make sure you're happy with the format. They're really quite simple. Most of them have the same approach that they're drag and drop. So it's, you don't need to be a designer. It's quite easy to get the formatting correct. So just play around.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for platforms, ones that we see the most frequently tend to be Campaign Monitor and MailChimp are sort of the easy ones. But hopefully that's helped you on your way, Lindy. As always, if you've got any questions, then please get in touch. We'll try and address those.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
So now to our rants and raves, and this is certainly a rave. We have come across the InspireEd School Marketing Awards, the 2018 Brilliance Awards, to be precise, from friends Rob and Lisa. And these guys are based in the States, and they are running a competition, an online competition for school marketing. So it's very specific to what we're talking about. And they are judging across a whole range of different criteria. We're talking in-house, we're talking agencies, enrollment campaigns, publications, websites, anything you can think of, you name it, they're judging on it and they are working out their favorites. So there are some absolutely standout videos in here, and some which we have disagreed on in terms of what our preferences are. But a great thing about these awards is that they're now accepting international applications. So this was based in the States for a while, but now we are moving global. So hopefully we would love to see some Australian submissions for next year. But I'm just going to talk about my favorite and I'll throw to you guys about what you love. One that really stood out for me was, it was a video for Christ School. This was an enrollment video. It was outsourced. And I love the video. I mean, going to an all boys school, it was exactly what you want to be seeing in an enrollment video. If I was watching that when I was trying to pick a school, I know who I'd be nagging mum and dad to go have a look at. Taz, you were a fan of the in-house video that was produced by Macaulay School.
I was, yeah. Look, this is a personal thing. I didn't like the Christ School ad. I mean, it was a great ad.
Dun, dun, dun.
We got to disagree sometime. I thought it was too slick, but I think for me it's more of a personal thing. But I really, really liked, there was a Macaulay School in-house video. It was the enrollment video in-house category. And it was all told from the students' perspective, and it was filmed over a whole year. Yeah. So I really loved how they managed to really showcase student life in a really authentic, real way. And it was also, I really loved how they paired not only the students' personality, but the music was great as well.
Yeah. I mean, the school, Macaulay School, actually did very well. I mean, they had submissions or at least winners in that enrollment video, had a video in the holiday section, had a social media videos as well. So they're obviously doing very well with their in-house team. And obviously in the States, we might be looking at big budgets or whatever it is, but there are a couple that didn't quite hit the mark. Rita, was there any that sort of stood out for you in that respect?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's interesting. They're very much at two ends of the spectrum, because I know what you're saying, Tess, that, and again, budget, when there's really slick production. And also, one, it can cost potentially a lot of money, but also it may not suit the personality of the school or the college. It may just not be addressing the target audience that they want. There was one I particularly liked, which was Crystal Springs Upland School. I think they won bronze. But what I really liked about that was just very honest, simple student testimonials. No special effects, I'm afraid, not too slick. But that said, really nice upbeat music and really focused on the relationship between students and teachers. There was also a rugby school one, which was a bit more dramatic, stunning location, drone footage. Again, addressing a different target audience, but also really, really well done.
Yeah, I mean, talking about that winner for you, Tess, I mean, that I filmed over a year. We're talking strategy. We're talking something that hasn't just been dreamt up. This isn't a sort of, we need to run a social media campaign next month. This kind of content was pre-planned and dreamt up really, really nicely. I mean, there are some in there for me which were very, very slick. There was a Western Reserve spot, but for me, that was too long. I mean, that had pretty much every student singing an incredible, and don't get me wrong, it was incredible, but man, for me, it just didn't stop.
As someone who used to teach, I cannot picture students or past students of mine or other colleagues that I've had in the past singing in that way. So for me, it didn't quite do the trick.
But is it? And I think something to remember as well is that it's about the students. So even though it's great to showcase a stunning location, cool drone footage and whatnot, remember that who you're talking to, you know, do the students want to see this? Does it make them want to go to your school or college?
Does it fit with your brand? Absolutely. I mean, the videos that really, and the content, it's not just videos that are on these awards. I would definitely recommend that you check them out, because there are publications that they've rated a whole range of different categories. But yeah, the ones that seem very in tune with the school itself, as well as the demographic they're obviously approaching, are the ones that seem to be singing the best. So definitely go check them out.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
That almost brings us to the end of episode 150 for SMC. Listen out for a bit of a shakeup from episode 151 as we look to move around the formats a little bit. Holding the stream is very menacingly. Go on.
We're ready to go.
Sorry, got it. Getting excited.
You need to change yours, Tess.
That's
dead. From episode 151, we'll be looking to shake up the format a little bit. We really want to deep dive into some specific topics, whether it's yearbooks, media buying, social messaging, graphic design, whatever it is. So if there's something that you want to find out a little bit more about that you want us to deep dive on, then please email us at smc@image7.com.au. Also, depending on when you're listening to this, you should hopefully be receiving an invitation to participate in our 2019 social media survey for schools. So we are benchmarking against last year, so it'd be great to have as many participants as possible. So if you are listening from the Image 7 website, why not pop over now to your favorite podcast player for your fortnightly dose of school marketing and communications goodness. Search for SMC School Marketing and Communications and you will find us there. That is it. For episode 150, from Rita, Tess, and myself, Charlie. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
See you next time.